welcome to the UK Gamers Podcast. Now, sadly, this podcast is coming on the back of the recent announcement of Dave Arnson's death. Now, there was a bit of confusion as to whether he had actually passed away or not. Confirmation did finally arrive from the family, and he passed away at about 11 o'clock on the 7th of April 2009. For those of you not in the know, Dave Arnson was one of the co-creators of Dungeons & Dragons, and he was involved in the gaming industry in many ways. And in fact, what I've done is I've thrown away the script for this podcast so I can dedicate it to Dave Arnson. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to cover one of the game systems he was involved with, which was Commands and Colors. So that's what I'm going to talk about in this podcast. And if you look in the show notes, I'll try and have some details as to where you can go to send condolences to Dave Arnson's family, etc. So there you go, that's what I'm doing this podcast, and what I'm going to do now is I'll just get some news out of the way, and then when we come back, we'll be talking about the Command & Colors game system. Okay, well, following on from the news of Dave Arnson's death, is the announcement that Wizards of the Coast have decided to get all heavy-handed with PDFs, and what's rather disturbing about this is they're pulling the plug on all PDF distribution, and part of that means that if you've bought, for example, from RPG Now, a PDF file, they will host it for you. So if you lose your copy, you can go back on there and re-download it. Well, Wizards of the Coast are putting a stop to that. There'll be no more AD&D PDF products out there. And this is quite a disturbing little trend. Not sure exactly what's going on there. Lots of speculation. And I think the one that rings with me the most is that they're concerned with piracy. They're also missing out on some of the revenue stream. Of course, they're wanting to push forth edition D&D, so combining all of those factors together, they're probably going to pull it in-house and do it themselves. As to how, we're not sure yet. Lots of speculation, as I say, but what is definitely going ahead is that PDF for D&D is being cut out. So if you've got PDFs, make sure you back them up. And if you haven't downloaded them yet, I think you can still get hold of them off RPG Now, but there's a little window of opportunity to do that, and you need to go ahead, or you're going to lose the chance permanently. Right, well, moving on to manufacturers of figures, you've got Perry Miniatures, continuing with their plastic range, with War of the Roses coming out. Of course, Games Workshop continue to churn out lots of nice new stuff, including the up-and-coming Imperial Guard. Now, they've also recently released the War of the Ring book, and some miniatures go with that. And all I can say is the War of the Ring, from my initial read-through, seems to be what I wanted Lord of the Rings to be all along. So I'm going to have a good read of that, try and have a game, and I'll probably be talking about that at some stage in the future. Yet another thing on my long list of to be talked about. And It's looking good, is all I can say. If you haven't picked up a copy and you love Lord of the Rings and you love the idea of fighting great big battles, just grab a copy. It's really nicely produced. Anyway, moving on, we have the Wings of War game system, which I spoke about last time. Well, the World War II stuff, more announcements on that. That's looking really good. And I'll try and find the link for that so you can go have a look at those figures. They're looking excellent. Now, with regard to miniatures, Crossfire is a nice little game. And if you've not come across it, it was quite revolutionary when it came out. Well, recently they had a games day, and it proved to be very successful. And this has meant that a Crossfire 2 is likely to go ahead. I haven't got too much details about it beyond they're going to be bringing it into production. I'm quite excited by this. I really like the Crossfire game system. I've played a 6mm game, a 20mm game, and a 54mm game, all based around the Crossfire rules. The 54mm game, we actually made one figure equal one man, and very heavily modified the game system. To such a degree that about the only thing that stayed in place was the fact that you move until someone grabs the initiative off you. But the Crossfire game system's been very, very good, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's done for Crossfire 2. I hope he goes ahead and brings out a one-man, one-figure element to it, because at the moment it's more like a squad. And whilst that's great, I like the one-man, one-figure kind of configuration for Crossfire. Right, with regard to shows, there's been the biggies, which, as predicted, I failed to get too spectacularly. The Sheffield Triples and, of course, the big salute show have come and gone. And I believe Backus did some announcements there, and also Impetuous went along, and that's a little game system I had a chance to play, the Basic Edition, which is a free download off their website. And it was pretty impressive, I have to say, and it's a game system I might have to have another look at some stage. Now, up-and-coming shows, on the 19th, you've got Dragon Meat, and that's always quite a good little show to go to. I'm pretty certain I won't manage to get to that one. And then in May, there's Beer and Pretzels and ShadowCon. And, of course, the big one that I'd really like to get to, Tentacles. And that's a show that gets lots of great reviews by people who've gone in the past, and definitely a show I'd like to get to at some stage. Anyway, that's pretty much all the news I want to talk about, because I want to get on to the meat of this podcast, which is going to be Command and Colours. So I'll see you after this little break.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited YoggSothoth.com more often.
YoggSothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great, and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from YoggSothoth.com.
And welcome back. Well, I've decided, as I said at the start of the show, to talk about Command & Colours Ancients in particular. But the Command & Colours Ancients game is actually part of the Command & Colours game range. Now, back in 2000, Avalon Hill Hasbro brought out Battle Cry, and that covers the American Civil War, 1861 to 1864. You then had, a bit later on, Days of Wonder, bringing out in 2004 Memoir 44, and then in 2006, what I think are the best versions of the Command & Colours game, Battle Lore, and that's by Days of Wonder, and Command & Colours Ancients by GMT Games. Now, recently Battle Lore was actually bought by Fantasy Flight Games, so it's now a Fantasy Flight Games product. This did cause a bit of a kerfuffle, but the dust seems to have settled on that now, and it looks like everything's going to be fine on that front, and looking forward to seeing what Fantasy Flight Games are going to do with the product. Now, as I say, I think Command & Colours Ancients is the best version of the game, and I'm going to concentrate on that. Now, why am I talking about Command & Colours by Richard Borg when I'm dedicating this podcast to Dave Arnson? Well, the reason for that is because Dave Arnson was actually a playtester on Command & Colours Ancients, and I believe he was involved in quite a few of the Command & Colours games. Now, what is a Command & Colours game? Well, basically, it's a game played with wooden blocks or plastic figures or potentially even chits on a map that's divided into three sections, a left and right flank and then a central component. You then have a command deck, which both players use, and that allows you to issue units of a certain type, to issue units to a certain part of the board, or some special little extra cards, depending on the game. You then also have battle dice, which you roll when units actually are engaging in ranged or melee combat. Now, the game at its core is pretty simple. It's abstracted your units down into three basic types, green, blue and red, which are basically lights, mediums and heavies. But there is some subtle variation, particularly in Command & Colours Ancients. Now, in Battle Lore, you do have the extra complexity of lore and monsters and special kind of fantasy units like goblins and dwarves. But that's one of the beauty of the game system. At its core, it's basic, but it's very easy to tweak and expand and add complexity to. Now, with regard to Battle Lore, I do think this is a very good game. In particular, Days of Wonder really did a good job on producing the box. It's a beautiful, full-colour product. The box is glorious, riot of colour, and excellent graphic design. Now, you might not like the cartoony artwork, but it really suits the theme well, and pretty much shows you everything that you're going to get right on the box there. Now, inside, when you open up, the impressiveness just continues. You've got huge amounts of figures, I think it's over 200, Now, one of the problems is there are so many figures that some of your figures might have got a bit bent out of shape. There is a solution to that. If you look it up online, it basically involves hot water, dip your figure in, it will kind of hopefully snap back into position, and then as it cools off, it will set in that new position. So that's pretty easy to sort out. And also, they take paint pretty well. There's some really nice examples of painted figures out there. Now, the Battle Lore game is, as I say, very well produced, and when you've kind of removed the figures and got them out of the way, you're then confronted with all the bits, and there's loads of little bits, all pre-punched, and again, lovely thick card, full colour, really, really nice stuff. In particular, the map board is gloriously well produced. You've got nice high quality cards for your lore deck and your command deck. You've got some little wooden dice. Now, the wooden dice, the graphics on there could be a bit better for colourblind people. The helmets for green, blue and red are very similar, but if you look very carefully, I think there's some dots on the blue, if I remember correctly, and some slits on the red helmets, which might help you identify which is which a bit better. Now, as I say, really good production values. And before I move on from Battle Lore, I should just mention the figures. Now, the figures are roughly 20mm. I think they're actually more like 18mm. But you might find if you buy two boxes, you don't have exactly the same figures. Don't panic. The core figures are all set and are what you need to play all the different adventures, as they're called. But they are slightly different from box to box. You're not guaranteed to get exactly the same amount of mix of figures in every single box. Now, talking about the adventures, that's one thing also that I think Days of Wonder did a really good job on. The actual adventures are structured in such a way that they introduce the game rules to you bit by bit. You start off with just a plain 100-year war battle, Agincourt. You then end up with goblins, then dwarves coming along, then a bit of magic, monsters, and finally what's called the War Council. Now, this is something that makes Battle Lore a bit different from Command & Colours Ancients. You can actually change your War Council. You can have a really good commander, or not quite so good commander, but a cleric and a wizard, or a rogue or a fighter. And this can introduce lots of extra variety to your game. And this is one thing that I think makes Battle Lore potentially better than Command & Colours Ancients. But for me, I find that Command & Colours Ancients is just simply superior in every single way to Battle Lore, and given the choice between the two, I would always go with Command & Colours Ancients. Your mileage may vary. I'm going to post a link to a video that talks about Battle Lore, and that's very, very good, and I recommend you watch that. That's a video by Scott Nicholson. Now, coming back to Command & Colours Ancients, Command & Colours Ancients, as I say, is a really, really good game. However, I was a bit disappointed when I bought the core set originally. GMT Games have bundled a really poor quality map, in my opinion, with the core set. It's a kind of thinnish card, kind of almost paper map. Not very popular with me. I know a lot of kind of wargaming board gamers don't mind it and just say, oh, I'll just whack a bit of Perspex on. But to me, that's unacceptable, particularly with the price that Command & Colours Ancients works out at over here. It's a big, heavy box, and therefore it's quite expensive to get hold of here in the UK. And at that price, you'd expect a slightly better quality components inside. Now, the actual production values, I think, are pretty good. But you know, the map board lets the game down a bit. And the train pieces that go on that map board are not particularly great either. And they didn't do as good a job there as Days of Wonder did with Battle Lore. Having said that, the actual game engine itself is really well produced. All the other bits and pieces are really nice. You get lovely little wooden blocks, which is a bit of a first for Command & Colours. Almost every single other game has basically plastic figures. Command & Colours Ancients, you have little wooden blocks which you have to put stickers on. And this is something else that people might want to gripe about. Personally, to me, it wasn't a big deal. Didn't take too long, and gives you something to do whilst listening to some music or something. But first of all, get your stickers onto your little wooden blocks, and then you're ready to go. Now, in Command & Colours Ancients, you have your green, your blue, and your red units, but there is a bit of variety on there based on the actual icon on your sticky label. So, for example, you can have blue auxilia and blue barbarians, and they have slightly different abilities, which are you can look up very easily on the quick reference card that comes with the game. Now, the quick reference card, to be honest, once you've read through the rules once or twice, you can just play the game with the quick reference cards, and you get two, one for you and one for your opponent. You get some nice produced command cards. You get some lovely plastic dice, which some people don't like, but I think they're fantastic. Again, you're going to have to sticker those. And if you buy the expansion sets, you'll get a bit more of those as well. And you should never have too few dice on you. Now, the core game, as I say, very well produced apart from the map and terrain pieces, which I thought were a bit disappointing. However, if you buy the expansions, you can actually resolve that. Now, the first expansion, Greece versus the Eastern Kingdoms, took things back in time. The core set's basically the Punic War, but expansion one is Greece versus the Eastern Kingdoms. So that's basically the Persian Wars that Greece got involved in. Then you've got expansion two, which is Rome versus the Barbarians, you know, your Celts, your Germans, and so forth. Now, that actually introduced a really nice, high-quality, thick cardboard map. So, if you buy the game, I'd recommend you definitely pick up the core set and at least expansion number two to just get hold of that really nice map. Now, if you don't like the idea of Rome versus the Barbarians, you might want expansion three, which also comes with a nice, thick, high-quality map, and that's the Roman Civil Wars. So, with the three expansions, you can actually play basically from Greece through to the rise of Carthage, the fall of Carthage due to the rise of Rome, the rise of Rome to its kind of imperial status. Now, you can't actually play any of the imperial battles at the moment. It's all the Republic. But expansion 4 that's been announced and hopefully is actually available now, I haven't been able to track it down, is called Imperial Rome. And then finally, you've got Epic Ancients, which is expansion 5. Now, I'm going to have to look into that because there are actually some rules in expansion 2 and 3 to play Epic, because the hard mats that you get with those are actually double-sided, so you can play it as a single board, or you can butt those two boards together by flipping them over, and you've got one big, huge board. So, the expansions are well worth getting. In fact, I've got all three of the expansions. You get loads of blocks, so you're going to be stickering away like mad. You get loads of scenarios. In fact, I haven't played all the way through the core set yet, so I'm looking forward to playing all the different games. Obviously, you can end up with huge amounts of wooden blocks of different colours if you buy all three sets, and they will take up quite a bit of shelf space. As I say, a bit pricey in the UK, so watch out for that. Now, what I really enjoy about Command & Colours Ancients is the subtlety in what's basically a very simple game. The command deck, I think it's about 60 cards, has lots of little subtle variations. For example, you've got cards that order units on a flank, cards that order just, you know, certain types, all green or all blue. You can also get some special things like double time, inspired leadership. There's also darken the sky, which allows your archers to go ballistic and open a can of whoop-ass on the enemy. You've got line commands, whereas if you've lined up all your units properly, they can all march forward as one. The I Am Spartacus card's quite good fun. All I can say is, as long as you're playing it, I was on the receiving end of it last night, and it wasn't quite so amusing. There's also a card like First Strike, which is really quite amusing. Again, not for me, because I was on the receiving end of that as well. Basically, you get your battle ready to go, and then your enemy goes, ah, I'm going to First Strike. And what's annoying about that is sometimes they might see you off, so you've manoeuvred all your units ready to go into battle. They First Strike you. Get a load of flags, your guys chicken and run. So watch out for some of those things. And this is the thing that I think brings a lot of depth. How you play your cards, how you move your units, will determine on whether you feel like the game's hosed you or not. You're typically going to have five cards or more in hand. A couple of scenarios you might have a bit less and a bit more. But basically, you're going to have options as to what to do. And you're going to decide which card to play. And if you get really stuck, most of the cards at the bottom say, if you don't have anything that this applies to, or you don't want to do this, just order one unit. So you're never going to get totally hosed. Now the dice, they're different. You've got little green circles for hits against green units, blue triangles for hits against blue units, red squares for hits against red units. You've got cross swords, which only some units can make use of. You've got retreat flags, which are white, and then a purple background with a white helmet for leaders. And that symbol is for basically determining if a leader's killed, and also for determining if you get extra hits. If you've got a leader attached to your unit, a leader symbol will allow you to put a hit on another unit. If your unit's destroyed or your leader's caught by himself, The leader symbol is what you don't want to see, because that means your leader's potentially been killed. Now, as long as your leader's with a unit, it's pretty hard to kill him off, because you're going to need two leader symbols to kill an enemy leader. However, if he's caught out in the open by himself, you just need one leader symbol, and therefore it's a bit more likely he's going to die. Now, you also get some scenarios. Now, what I tend to do is, they're a bit of a pain to set up, like a lot of these kind of wargamey things. Takes a bit of while, if you haven't sorted out your blocks, to find all the bits and set it up. But once you've set it up, play both sides. It's a quite quick game to play. And all you need to do is you play the battle, declare who the winner is, and then swap sides, set up again, and play through again. And that's what I've been doing with my friend. Now, with the battles, let's take the first battle here, 406 BC. You've got Carthage versus basically Sicily. You've got five command cards for Carthage, so they're going to have up to five cards in their hands. But the enemy units are going to have six commands, so they're going to have a bit more tactical flexibility. They also get to move first, which can be a bit of a pain. And what you need to do is capture five banners. Now, to capture banners, basically you want to destroy a unit. When you destroy a unit, you're going to get a victory banner. Now, with regard to units, typically a foot unit's going to have four blocks, a cavalry block is going to have three blocks, and things like elephants and chariots are going to have two blocks, and a leader's going to just be a single block. So to actually destroy a unit, you need to put four hits, for example, onto a light unit, four hits onto a heavy unit, and you know, that can take some doing sometimes, but depending on the unit you've got, will depend on how many dice you roll. And obviously, the more dice you roll, the more likely you are to destroy the enemy unit. You also get a nice little rule book with the game, and I think that's pretty well laid out. It talks about playing command cards, ordering your units, moving, how they can move, range combat, and so on and so forth, and goes through. And then near the back, you've got leaders and what goes wrong with leaders, and also what the different terrains do, and some special information on some of the command cards. It's a nice little book. Now, the thing with this book is it's actually available online as what's known as a live-in rule book. So if you want to see the rules or you want to make sure you've got the up-to-date copy, just go to GMT's website and download it. But the most useful thing that you get with the game, in my opinion, are the reference cards. You get two, one for you and one for your opponent. And these reference cards have pretty much everything you actually need to know to play the game. Obviously, you need to read the rules first, but once you've read through the rule book once or twice, you're going to be pretty much good to go with just the reference sheets. Now, on the front sheet, you've got a summary of range combat and close combat. In the central sections, you've got the units, and that's really, really useful. For example, the Roman light infantry, they're classed as light greens. They can move two, they can fire two. If they move, they use one dice. If they don't move, they use two dice when they're firing. In close combat, they may move and fight, and they get two dice for close combat. They can ignore some bits and pieces, which basically is normally flags if they're supported. They've also got some special rules. For example, if you roll swords on your dice, well, normally that's a hit, but with light infantry, swords don't count. They can evade close combat, so you don't have to battle. If someone tries to engage you in battle and you've got light infantry, they can run away. Also, some units, when they advance, they can advance and battle. Other units just advance. And in addition, you've got retreats as well, and special rules. For example, warriors, who are blue units, they can move one, and then they may battle. Alternatively, you can move them two, and then they must battle. And then in addition, if they're the people who initiate battle, they get four dice, but if they're attacked, they only get three dice. And they can ignore a flag. All sorts of little rules like that, and that's all summarised on the reference sheet here. It also talks about leaders. If the leaders are casualties, you can say roll two dice if they're attached to a unit, and if both are leaders, they die. If they're all by themselves, you roll one dice, and if that's a leader, they die. And then on the back is a summary again of the troops and the list of the cards that you actually get in the deck. And it basically tells you how many dice you're going to roll and whether swords count or not. One thing I would say is elephants are potentially nasty. They can have anything from 1 to 5 dice. And if they roll a sword, they can keep rolling to hit. So the sword hits, and then they re-roll that dice. And if it keeps coming up swords, they can go hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you. Elephants, though, as is fairly standard for games, are a bit fragile. And they can run away, and anyone who gets in their way gets attacked. So elephants are a two-edged sword. So that pretty much covers the game. As I say, I really, really like it. The leaders can make a big difference. As I say, having a leader attached means you're more likely to hit a unit. It also makes them able to ignore flags. One of the big problems is your units will often run away when you don't want them to. Now, as I say, with the game being based around capturing banners, it's not necessarily about destroying the enemy. It's about destroying enough units to make the battle unacceptable for them. And this, I think, follows pretty well the kind of ancient battles. People didn't just stay on the battlefield fighting for days on end until everyone was dead. You know, they'd fight away, and then at a certain time, they'd say, okay, had enough here, let's go. And I believe the game captures that pretty well. Now, as I say, you can feel sometimes the cards are against you or the dice are against you, but really that shouldn't be the case. I've had all the cards I want and been kicked into seven shades of what-sits by my opponent, and equally I've not necessarily had the cards I want, but by being tactical, you just pick on a unit, beat it down, capture its banner, pick on another unit, beat it down, capture its banner, and suddenly you've won the game, even though you don't have the cards you want. So it's a good game. The expansions, as I say, do bring in some extra rules. For example, going from the three-line Roman battle formation to the Marian Legion formation. And also, obviously, allows your legions, who are heavy infantry, to chuck Pila as well, which can come as a bit of a nasty surprise for some people. So, really good game. Well worth looking into. And as I say, I think if you buy any of the Command & Colors games, you're going to be happy. But my tip for the number one is Command & Colors Ancients. So I hope that's given you an idea of that game. If you've got any questions, then please get in contact. Anyway, all the best and good gaming.